We're about to get back started. If y'all go ahead and start finding your seats. Got a couple announcements while y'all are getting settled. As soon as I find my notes. Just to remind all the presenters that the deadline for uploading your papers is January 20th, so it's coming up pretty quick. Please try to get that in as quick as you can, at least by that deadline, so Gus and I don't have to try to track everybody down. The other thing is a business meeting that's going to be in Gallery 2, which is right next door, starting at 5:30. At that time, we're going to be giving away the student awards from the student competition that's going on next door, as well as our IPM award, and then also discussing some pretty important topics, at least one pretty important topic in terms of the future of the Beltwide Cotton Conferences. So please, y'all try to make it to that at 5:30. Again, it'll be next door in Gallery 2, starting at 5:30. And if all of that I said doesn't get you there, we are going to have an open bar, so we'll have free beer, and I think maybe wine, I'm not sure, at least beer. So y'all make sure you make it to the business meeting. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mike, and he's going to continue moderating the rest of the session this afternoon.
Thank you, Jeff. We're going to go right into the session because Tina says she's got 48 slides. Zone management. Is it practical for insect pests in Mid-South cotton? Dr. Tina Gray Teague.
Hello. I work in Northeast Arkansas. This is the NAS map, the latest one. The red pixels are cotton, and there's a lot fewer pixels this year than there has been in the last 10. We're down from 10 years ago, 1 million acres, down to fewer than 200,000. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Reduced cotton acreage, low commodity prices, the farm program changing, and high production costs. I really can't do anything about any of those, but high production costs as a cotton entomologist, I think we're spending way too much money. And so I'm going to be a little preachy today about some things about how we should be moving on and changing how we do our business. Business as usual, this is not the path forward if we're going to have any cotton in the future, but certainly for from environmental sustainability, but as well as economic sustainability for our rural production. So zone management, is it practical for insect pests in Mid-South cotton? When we talk about zone management and using the promise of precision agriculture that has been made 15 or 20 years in some cases, we've not really done a good job in cotton and pest management of implementing. And I think to move forward in this, we need to be thinking about crop carrying capacity and managing for limited factors. The carrying capacity is the yield potential, and it varies with season. Weather, it's different every year. Some things we can mitigate. If we have a drought, we can irrigate, but in the humid Mid-South and Southeast, we can get rain at the wrong time. And unless it's a devastating rain event, most of the time it's the clouds that really can limit our yield with reduced solar radiation. And so it's got those are problems. But spatial variability within fields, landscape effects, we as entomologists, we're familiar with those, how those can affect pest risk, and then variability within the field and soil, and that includes elevation and drainage as far as and textural differences. Insecticides only protect yield potential. They don't add yield. They just protect what our carrying capacity is, and we just protect. So as we move forward and try to use management zones, I'm very picky and about as a pest manager about what's called a zone. Engineers, when they set up the zones, they may have 25, 30 zones in a field, but they're sitting in front of their computer and don't go out in the field. I think if you have a zone, you need to be scouting and monitoring the cotton in those zones. So I'm very, very, very stingy about how many zones I would put in a field. And they mostly for insects, we'd be associated with landscape and with infield variability. If we look at this little 35-acre field that I've been working in, we can see this landscape difference across this end. This is wonderful habitat for pests that may move into this field. This is a soil EC map of the field, and you can see there's some soil differences across there. So both of those things can affect carrying capacity of the crop, and also we have some different pest risks. I think we can understand the landscape, especially if you're old enough to remember boll weevils. But if we think about these within field soil textural variability, this is a picture of that field, and this has got sand blows associated with that field, and so they've got really nice high yield potential areas that are loamy sand, and then these low yielding areas that have low profit generally. The production inputs are the same of these, and they're even higher. They can even be higher inputs in those low profit areas, especially if the farmer's trying to increase the yield of those and make them uniform. But year after year, those areas are still low yielding. So from a practical standpoint for zone management insects, our objective should be to protect susceptible plants, but don't waste costly control inputs where the plants are not susceptible, or the pest numbers are low and they don't pose an economic risk, or both. The problem is, where is that, when is that, and then if we can define those, we need guidelines that are simple to communicate and to guide our crop advisors and farmers. We are not using the information, in my part of the Mid-South, we have, all these producers have wonderful equipment that's very expensive and have amazing capacity to collect information, but we're not using that information very well. Same way with our sprayers. Every farmer that I work with has the capacity to do prescription and variable rate sprays, but they're really just using this equipment for their AB lines and they broadcast sprays for insecticides. So my first thinking about zones for insects in thinking about very, very conservative use of management zones is in termination, because we have good decision rules and lots of experience with termination, when to quit insecticides. So we're going to protect the plants that are susceptible, but don't waste insecticides where they're not. Now, and the insect that I've been working with on this is tarnished plant bug. It's a full season pest. It's got about 700 host plants in the Mid-South. Every major agronomic plant grown in the Mid-South is a host for it, but it's only of economic importance in cotton. It's floral buds and flowers are vulnerable. It causes sheds. And it will also, there's a little square shed there. It'll also feed on the fruit. So these are some bowls with plant bug injury. But there's a point in time where bowls are no longer of importance, where they pose no value economically. These little bowls I pulled from upper canopy, these are upper canopy bowls I pulled just a few days after defoliation. So these are not important, and we can define when we have the last bowls. And we've been doing that in Arkansas. We started the research for this in the 1980s. Fred Borland wrote a paper defining the flowering date of the last effective bowls. It's based on nodes above white flower monitoring. In Arkansas, we say it's the flowering date of our last effective bowls, our last money bowls, as Bill Robertson calls it, is when you have a field average of node above white flower 5. We could say a zone average of node above white flower 5 would be the flowering date of our last effective bowls in a zone. We then use that flowering date, add heat units to that, to figure out when that population of bowls is no longer susceptible to whatever insect pests that we're talking about. For plant bugs, it's 250 heat units after flowering. So last effective bowls, add heat units, infestations after 250 heat units, we can ignore. So we know when to quit. We've been doing this a long time. So here's a really easy example of how you could use zone management for termination. So this is a center pivot field, and we plant the entire field in the Mid-South and the pivots and even the corners. In some years, the corners make really good yields. In some years, when it doesn't rain, they're really low. So here's this field. This is an NDVI image. The brown is low yield, and it's way past the initial field at this time for this field. It was open bowl. It was all dried out. you'd never think there weren't any plant bugs out there. So if you had plant bugs in the middle, would you spray the whole field, or could you use zones and spray only the vulnerable cotton and leave the and skip the cotton that was no longer susceptible? Yeah. So a county agent nearby me, he calls these insect safe bowls. So insect safe area and the susceptible. So that would be your decision guide on this, on zone management. Now, I've been doing this little. This is easy to set up. You don't have to have any fancy sensors, and it is zone worthy. When I think of a zone, it's a large area, predictable pattern, and has different yield potentials. We've done this validation of this approach for 4 years now. Wildy Family Farms in Manila, Arkansas. I have it in the belt wide for the last 2 years, so you get the details from that. But very, very quickly, the treatments that we did the validation on, we had a broadcast spray, which you spray all the way across the field. Check, which you ran the sprayer across, but not to spray, so it's a check. And then the zone where the plants were insect safe, they're past that 250-degree heat unit endpoint, don't spray. You only spray the vulnerable stuff. So that's the zone treatment. For 4 years, this has worked out really well. No differences in yield. Actually, we reduced the spray cost by 14% with this simple approach to zones. And I think with other zone practices, this is a real step forward. And it's simple and I think easy to implement. It's particularly easy for farmers who already have the GPS guidance and controllers, and they're using notable flower based endpoints for their spray decisions anyway. But now's the time in the winter when it's easy to set those zones so that when time comes at the end of the season, when they have decision fatigue and they have all these other things, they just hit the switch on those and terminate. Crop advisors will have to take samples, two zones, have to sample, have to know what's going on in those two different places in the field. It'll take about 35 seconds more in the field to get those. So what about other types of zone management? This is harder. This is in season. So you got in early season, let's say it's a second week of flower, mid season, and got bugs. Do you spray the whole field? In a zone management scenario, you'd have differential. You spray some and spray others. This is much harder. I've been working in this field. Wildy Farms. This is about 40-acre field. Really, really variable. This corner here, this is an NDVI image from 2005. I've got a soil EC map here. We've been messing with zones in this field really seriously since 2011. And I've got yield maps and lots of work in this. And I still don't have a good recommendation yet for zones. But in 2013, we had grid sampling in here and looked at plant bugs, and we saw some very nice patterns of plant bug establishment across the field the first week of flower. So, but still, this is very difficult in season, and I think that this is something that crop advisor would be very conservative crop advisor would not maybe be willing to do right now. So we're still working on this, but border sprays. That's a type of zone management. We used this particular field. This farmer used a border sprays all the time when he had boll weevils. So this may be something that with a good crop advisor with experience and knowledge, use border sprays. Let's think about that. That's the type of zone management. We can do that. We have other things besides sprayers that are our equipment. We've got planters, and we can use these. We've got varieties. We can deploy these. This is 2011 in Mariana, a variety that was not well adapted to the Mid-South. It's plant bugs and worms. But this field, this little plot, made 1,500 pounds of cotton and did not receive a single foliar application. It's just a variety difference. And it was just amazing to me. So we soon will have, they have these in the Midwest now with corn, controllers on their planters where they can plant up to four varieties. We can plant multiple seed rates now, but soon we'll have multiple varieties. How are we going to deploy these varieties that we have? We've got amazing, amazing varieties. So I'm working on some of these kinds of questions now. This is a study by Ray Benson. He's a PhD student. And he was interested in the seeding rates. And I convinced him to do some other variability, some other factors in there, a couple of varieties and irrigation. Way too complicated experiment. But he was interested in seeding rate. We put some other things in there. So we had seeding rates of 4.5 seeds per foot, 3 seeds per foot, which is our recommendation in Arkansas, and 1.5 seeds per foot. But across this big field, the reason we picked these, the seeding rates, seeds are very expensive. Those three rates range from $45 to about $140 an acre. So there's a $100 difference an acre in those seeding rates that we've been evaluating. Our $91 is that 3 seeds per acre. After the first year, I'm going to go through this really fast, we saw no difference amongst the seeding rate in a wet year. It rained, no irrigation effect. But there were some things that going on. As an entomologist, I was kind of keeping up with this agronomist experiment. And so we were looking across at how these landscape affected plant bugs. The plant bugs moved out of this big wildlife refuge. I had a wonderful, wonderful plant bug across this field. Even though it was managed by the commercial farmer, we saw some differences among varieties. The orange bar there on 4.5 seeds, this is had a lot of terminal damage. This is a variety that's very hairy, a stonebill variety. This phytogen variety is susceptible. I did not expect to see this damage on this hairy variety. It's supposedly resistant. High density plantings of the phytogen had more bugs, more bug ant damage. So this kind of information led us to the next year of study. And Ray put in his experiment again, and I put in a piddle plot. And no insecticides were used in my piddle plot. I had 60 rows at different rates. Jeffrey Willers has helped me with this design. We're still analyzing the data. I had 1.5 seeds per foot with this resistant variety that was attractive to adults, 6 seeds per foot, and then I had 3 seeds per foot strips across. I got remember plant bugs, if you don't know this, they're really attracted to high biomass, and I saw my track crop that essentially that outer edge of high density seeding, I got more bugs in that. We sprayed our little 60 row plot only 2 times. For Ray's experiment with all his seeding rates, he saw significant differences in the resistant versus the susceptible line, but no differences in seeding rate, no differences associated with irrigation because it rained a lot. But here we have resistant variety outperformed a susceptible one. Seeding rates made no difference in my piddle plots, but across my piddle plots where I saw more bugs, my resistant lines still performed the same across all 3 seeding rates. It was only the susceptible line. So the yield map very quickly it's really neat to see those, that red is low yields in across those susceptible lines. So varieties was the most important thing. So regular basic IPM principles of planting resistant varieties and thinking about these spatially, cultivar selection, we could do that now. Reduce seeding rate, $100 an acre could be saved on this seeding rate decision. And zone management planning, that which needs to be at this time of the year in the winter. So business as usual, nope, we need to move forward, use our knowledge. And these are my farmers are just wonderful and good technicians. And thank you, I've had too many slides, I know, but appreciate your attention.
Questions for Tina? Thank you.
Oh, okay.